But why not make a quilt inspired by a cabbage or a fish or your favorite pasta shape or whatever? You know, there are so many sources of inspiration out there that improv gives you the freedom to then put into quilt making.
This is the Modern Domestique podcast, where each episode focuses on a different aspect of modern home economics. It's all about exploring a way of life that enhances our community and environment from where it all begins, in the home. My main hope is that this podcast encourages a new look at what modern home economics can be, and that these interviews empower you to make modern home economics your own in your home and community. Today's interview is with Nicholas Ball. As you'll hear in the interview, we've been friends for quite a few years, but the reason for today's interview with him is to talk about his quilts. Nicholas, who's known on social media as Quilts from the Attic, is specifically an improv quilter. His first book, Inspiring Improv, was released 4 years ago, and in just a couple months, his newest book, Use and Ornament, The History and Future of Improv Quilting, will be released. In the interview, Nicholas talks about how he found improv and why it can usually be quicker than traditional quilting, and he gives us tips on how to quilt at home with a standard home sewing machine. I had so much fun, and I felt super inspired by our conversation, and I really hope you will too. So today we're here with Nicholas Ball from Quilts from the Attic. I'll read a little bio about him and then he can maybe expand on that a little bit. Nicholas Ball is an improvised quilter from Cardiff, South Wales. His style of quilting comes from a love of the spontaneous and a joy of sewing in an organic and liberated way. He's taught improv quilting both nationally and internationally, contributed projects and articles to the UK's leading publications, and was co-presenter of the QNN TV show Quilt Monkey alongside fellow British quilter Katie Jones. His debut book, Inspiring Improv, was published by Lucky Spool in 2019, and his new book, Use an Ornament, is due out this summer. Hi, Nick.
Hey, Stacey. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for joining me today. I'm so excited to have this conversation with you.
Me too. It's an absolute pleasure. Thank you for asking me.
Yeah. So I have known Nick for like, what, 15 years or more?
Such a long time.
It's dare a little...
Dare we say it? Well, it would have been 2006. So that's closer to like...
That's almost 20 years. I mean, really.
I can't even do the maths. It's a long time.
we're admitting our age here. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean,
it's been a long time.
In those many years that we have known each other, you have always been a crafty person, but you haven't always been a quilter. No. Can you talk about a little bit about your journey from crafty person to professional quilter?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I, as you said, I've always been crafty. And growing up, I would spend a lot of time with my grandmother, who would teach me sort of the joy of creating with my hands. So she would teach me, embroidery stitches, and we would do cross stitch kits together. And she tried very valiantly to teach me to knit. And it was really sort of inspiring as a young child to see all of these amazing things that you could do with your hands in a crafty sort of way. So I've always had that love of creativity, and my background originally was in photography. So before we met, I was in art school and I did a degree in photography. And my ambition was to sort of travel the world and shoot the covers of famous fashion magazines. I wanted to be a fashion photographer. And that's kind of what led me to Paris, where you and I met. I went there with the ambition of pursuing that photography dream. And then Paris and life and wine and cheese and all of this distraction, great friends like you, sort of made that photography take a little bit of a backseat. So when we returned to the UK, I was a little bit disillusioned, really. I wanted something that would allow me to pour my creative energy into it, but something that wasn't photography. So I've always been sort of inspired by textile arts. The photography department in my art school shared a campus with the textile department. So I bought a very cheap sewing machine, some questionable fabric, and sort of just followed an online tutorial to make my first quilt, which was at the time a half square triangle quilt, which remains unfinished to this day. It's still a sort of quilt top somewhere in a drawer. But I've kept it because it was that quilt that sort of inspired and ignited that sort of spark and love of quilting. And here we are 10 years later. So this year marks the 10-year anniversary that I've been quilting. And in that time, as you've said, I've come to sort of appreciate a much more liberated way of sewing through improvised piecing. So I really follow patterns. And that choice has led me to teaching quilting and talking about quilting and writing about quilting. It's become a really big part of my life, and I love it. And I can't imagine now looking back doing anything else. So I guess everything happens for a reason. That path that I thought I would follow kind of twisted and got me here. So it's great. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Much as I think life in general often does, it surprises you if you're open to it, right? To following like Absolutely. This new spark of creativity or new spark of an idea or something. I was thinking as you were talking about, you know, how improv feels a little looser and a little less rigid because you're not following the patterns. Yeah. To me, quilting feels like a slow process. And I think just because I'm more of like a crocheter versus a knitter. I like the quicker things, you know, I'll sew up a quick garment that's an easy, you know, half hour sew or something, you know, once sure. you get everything cut out yeah. versus like the quilting that takes, you know, many months often. But to me, improv yeah. feels a little quicker somehow, even though time-wise it might not be. Maybe just because of the improvisational aspect of it, you're kind of making your own decisions as you're going, staying a little more engaged rather than like the, I don't know, following a pattern to the T every single block for months and months. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I get that. I mean, with improv, as you said, it's very spontaneous. You have the freedom to make decisions as and when. So mm-hmm. I think when you're following a pattern, there's always that, you know, at the back of your mind, there's that fear of not being able to stray too far from those instructions, because mm-hmm. if you do so, the quilt that you think you're making is not going to look like it's supposed to. Mm-hmm. And for that reason, you may sort of be double, triple checking yourself, making sure your measurements are correct, making sure you measure twice, cut once, that yeah. old adage that we as quilters know so well. So I think all of that adds to the time of making a quilt. It's not by any means a fast process, but when you look at it from a more organic way, you know, you can just, to use words that I love, hack and slash fabric, and there's no precise measuring. So it kind of becomes this almost frenzied activity whereby you can do it a lot more quickly, and it comes together a lot more quickly because of that lack of precision. Mm-hmm. That's not to say, you know, there isn't some element of sort of precision. Obviously you have to have your seams be sound and hold together, and you know, your thread must be strong enough to keep the fabric together and things like that. So there is an element of precision and sort of some things that you have to pay attention to. But as far as the journey of making a quilt goes, I would totally agree with you when you say that it kind of seems to go a little bit more quickly. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that reminds me of something, a quote from your first book. I think it was Your Quilt, Your Rules, which I Absolutely. Like just really love.
Yeah. It's because so simple.
Yeah, yeah. And often in quilting, it's like, I don't know, you have to do all this stuff. And I think with garment making the same, but I feel like quilting is so much more precise that like, you know, with a garment, you can kind of belt it if it doesn't quite turn out, you know, if the dress is a little big or whatever. But with a quilt, man, if those seams don't yes. match up, it can be really discouraging, I think. But yeah, Your Quilt, Your Rules, you're making this up as you go. So enjoy.
Absolutely. Yeah. Four simple words, but the sort of the ethos that I live my creative practice by, because, you know, when we're working on a traditional quilt, those seams have to match. The blocks have to be the size that they need to be. Otherwise, your rows aren't all going to come together easily and the quilt is not going to be square or whatever. But, you know, we can cut bits off with improv. We can add bits on. So there are definitely rules that you can make for yourself. And if you don't like something, it's very easy to change it.
Yeah,
I mean, I think other quilters will sort of understand this when I say when I started, and you know, I was learning from books from the library and online tutorials and all of that sort of stuff, where there was a very, very sort of rigid way of doing things, you know, and these were very traditional quilters who had written these books, and I didn't sort of question those methods at that time because I was so new, and you know, it was almost like, who's this person coming in and saying this we shouldn't do it this way. But what I like to encourage people who I talk to about quilting or whom I teach is that these are your quilts and they are your rules. So if you want to press your seams one way or another, if you want to do both in the same quilt, you absolutely can. If you want to put colors next to each other that aren't necessarily a match on the color wheel, you absolutely can. So it is very much a liberated process whereby you are in charge. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. And a more creative process too. In your first book, you know, there's a chapter on inspiration and all the inspiration that you draw from, you know, the natural world and architecture and, you know, your famous cabbage and leek quilts. Oh. And the, you know, and the cover of the book is, I think, the, you know, from our trip to Yosemite, you know, inspired by the Absolutely. Tree rings and everything.
Yep.
And I just want to quickly read a quote that really sticks out to me from that chapter. You say, as you go about your day, take off the blinders, look up, look down, look inside it out, get into the habit of viewing the world with your quilter's eye. And I love that because it's taking your creative inspiration from your day, like being able to slow yourself down, first of all, to be able to see these things, but also be like, sure, this really catches my eye and I like it, you know, and then have the tools to be able to then make a creative something out of that. And I really, I really love that. And,
you know, inspiration is at the heart of everything that I do. Sorry. And I would encourage people to do exactly what you've just read from the book, you know, and even more important now, I guess, because, you know, phones, screens, they're so ubiquitous and everyone's kind of going about their busy, frenzied life, looking down at the screen, and nobody's looking up anymore. You know, people are missing out on buildings in their own neighborhoods that they, you know, they've never seen before, like beautiful architecture, trees and plants that, you know, may be native to a really small locale where you live, but you just, you don't notice them because you're too busy kind of looking at your phone or whatever. So it's about inspiring people to find and things that they may not know about, but also to take that inspiration and put it into quilt making, because, you know, quilts made from traditional blocks like half square triangles and log cabins are beautiful things, but why not make a quilt inspired by a cabbage or a fish or your favorite pasta shape or whatever? You know, there are so many sources of inspiration out there that improv gives you the freedom to then put into quilt making. So I love the idea of just taking a pause, looking around you and being inspired by what's out there.
Yeah. And how empowering too, to be able to like recognize something that gives you that spark of creativity and then be able to like sit down and think like, oh, okay, with improv quilting specifically, how can I take this thing that inspires me and put it into like something I can hang on a wall or something I can put on my bed, you know, something tangible that I can remember from that's more than a picture.
Yeah.
And I mean, both of us love photography, but you know, it does take more time to make a quilt.
One thing I've found really useful is that photographer's eye we talk about. You know, I've kind of put that to being a quilter's eye now, but all of that stuff we learn about composition, line, shape, contrast, that, you know, that plays into improv quilting as well, because when you're following a quilt through your own sort of devising of that quilt, there are no instructions. So you need to know what size you want it to be and what sort of shape you want to introduce and what composition you want to make. So being able, not saying that everybody has to be a photographer or have a background in photography, but it's just about the idea of looking around you, looking at what's out there, looking at lines and patterns found in nature. And that will sort of allow you to then make these unique quilts that you wouldn't otherwise get from a pattern or a book.
And the quilt doesn't necessarily need to be like a king size quilt to fit on a bed, right? Like it can be the size of a pillow or, you know, which I think for a while I was like, I don't know, quilts are always big and whatever, but
I guess that's when you always see them. Like growing up, I used to watch a lot of like American TV shows and films. And now in hindsight, it's funny just how often this actually happens. But if you kind of look past the character speaking, you look at the set, there's almost always like a quilt on a bed or on the wall or folded over the arm of a chair. So, you know, quilts have been a big part of my life, but you are right. There always seem to be huge things. And I always encourage people to just have what I call like 5 minutes of play, particularly if you're coming from a traditional quilting background and you want to sort of explore improvised quilting. Just taking 5-10 minutes, taking a couple of scraps of fabric and just sewing them together, not worrying about what it's going to be or what it's going to look like or what size it's going to end up. And those fabric pieces will speak to you, and the shapes will speak to you, and they'll start to sort of engage you in a conversation. And that could literally just be a 5-inch piece of fabric that you've pieced together. And that could be a coaster or a little wall hanging, just, or a mini quilt. It doesn't have to be, you know, you don't have to commit to making a huge super king size quilt. It's a great way to get that creative energy out there without a long-term commitment.
Yeah. Yeah. I know you made a table runner for my mother, the Mother Domestique.
I did. Yeah, absolutely. With her favorite fruit, blueberry fabric.
Yes. I think she might've even given you the fabric and said, hey, make something for me.
She did. I can attest. She did. Yes. But that was fun. And again, a perfect example of, you don't have to make, you know, it doesn't have to take months and months and months.
Yep.
And as we've already talked about, improv generally comes together a lot more quickly than if you were, you know, precisely piecing a block. So something like a table runner or even smaller placemat, coaster, all brilliant starting points to explore the technique if you wanted to.
Yeah, for sure. I love that. So how many, quote, traditional quilts do you think you made before you started your journey into improv quilting? Because I know I have one.
Ooh, good question. You do, yes. Although that one, yes. So that, I would kind of say that that has one foot in each camp of the traditional and the improv, because it was a sort of pinwheel quilt that I made for you. But it was the pinwheel lines themselves, so the lines that made up the sort of sections of the pinwheel, were sewn randomly. So they weren't, you know, they weren't all equally measured. So I guess maybe that was like a transitional quilt for me. Oh, I know, exciting. So looking back to the quilts before that, I would say not that many. What I generally tended to do is, because I got bitten by the quilting bug quite early on and I just wanted to make quilts and quilts, I would sort of make a few blocks of a traditional log cabin, or make a few blocks of a traditional drunkard's path, a pinwheel, a nine patch, and kind of then just move on to the next thing. Mm. So in terms of fully finished traditional quilts, I would say I could count them maybe on one hand. And I think at least half of them have gone to other homes. Mm. And then, of course, we have the first quilt, which wasn't finished, which remains as a quilt top. So not that many. No, I mean, normally people kind of make a load of traditional quilts and then maybe move on to improv. But I was like, nope, my brain doesn't work this way. I want to move on straight away. I'm not even finishing this one. I'm going for it. So,
yeah,
not that many to look back on.
Yeah, how interesting. That's kind of a cool trajectory to be like, no, this is where my brain is leading me for sure.
Yeah, I think if you know, don't you? So you kind of just, you know, why waste time? And of course, all of that traditional piecing was good for me. You know, taught me about the importance of a accurate quarter of inch seam when you are working in a traditional method. It taught me about fabric and fabric quality and good quality thread and, you know, things that are brilliant to know whether you are a traditional quilter, a dressmaker, an improvised quilter, a general hobby sewist. You know, all of these things are good knowledge to have.
Yeah, for sure. Practice.
Absolutely.
I know that the idea of quilting, you know, all the layers of a quilt together can be really intimidating for home sewers, because it's often a bigger project with either a lot of really fine small lines, or, you know, freehand quilting or whatever. Would you have any advice, I guess, for newer quilters that are intimidated by that step?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I was one of them. So I think a lot of people, and you'll be surprised how often this happens when you talk to quilters, is that they love the piecing of the quilt and making of the top, but they dread the actual quilting, you know, the securing of the backing and the wadding and the top. I think the most off-putting is the size. You know, so we talked about this just now, where people feel the need to make huge projects. And then, of course, they struggle with that bulk, getting it under the arm of a standard domestic sewing machine. My top tip would be sort of perseverance. And not to want to sort of stifle your creativity. You know, if you feel the need to make a huge quilt, you should absolutely go with that, you know, with that need. But start small, just to get used to moving fabric under the presser foot and under the arm, more importantly. And then when you get a bit more confident with how to sort of how your machine works and how it sort of feeds fabric through, you can then quilt larger projects. And I've quilted, you know, 80 inches, 90 inch square quilts on what I would call just a standard domestic sewing machine. So not a long arm sewing machine, not a sit down long arm. This machine we're talking about has a throat space of about 7.5 inches. So it was a little bit bigger than sort of a smaller home sewing machine, but still a domestic sewing machine. And my top tip, I guess, would be that I read when I was learning to quilt that you should roll the quilt into sort of like a log shape, and that way you sort of push it under the arm. But what I found by doing that was when you roll the quilt layers together into a log shape, it becomes quite a solid, stiff item, if you like. It's unable to be sort of manipulated as easily as if you just scrunch the quilt up. So my top tip would be focus on a sort of small area just immediately around your needle and just keep your focus on there. And then for all of the other bulk that you're dealing with, rather than rolling it, just scrunch it, manipulate it and scrunch it. You can put some under the arm. If you've got a spare table or an ironing board that you can put to the left of your machine, that'll help take the weight. And also yourself, you know, our chests are a surface onto which we can sort of pile up layers of quilt. And I know that I've been there myself thinking, I'm getting hot under this quilt, trying to quilt this quilt. But I know that it's serving a purpose because it's taking the drag away from the needle. It's stopping that needle from flexing. So wherever you can put surfaces around you, that's a great tip. Don't roll the quilt, just sort of scrunch it up and push it under the arm. And just be patient. You're not going and not worry about what's sort of 3 or 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 inches away from where the needle is. Just focus on the needle and slowly and surely you will start to cover the entire surface of the quilt with stitches. But it is a slow process and it takes time and practice to manipulate that weight and that bulk.
For sure. Yeah. The last quilt I made was a t-shirt quilt for my nephew, and it was a large quilt. I made that mistake. And when I was quilting it, I like literally had pieces like over my shoulder on my head, just like, yep, like I was the jungle gym for the quilt to rest on.
And you know, if anyone ever walked in the room at that point, they're going to be thinking, what is going on here?
I know, the cat knew to stay away, the dog knew to stay away. It was definitely like, leave her to it.
Yeah, don't talk to me, I'm quilting.
That's funny. So let's talk a little bit about your first book, Inspiring Improv, that came out in 2019. Currently on Amazon, it has a 5-star rating and is on the Amazon Book Review Editor's Best DIY Books list. Can you talk about a little bit about your process behind writing this book? What was the inspiration for it? Stuff like that?
Absolutely. Yeah, of course. So I never imagined that I would write a quilting book. You know, I started quilting, as I said to you, just to be a sort of creative outlet. It was never going to become my job. It was never going to become my life. And as I started sort of experimenting with improv quilting more, and I joined Instagram, I started sharing my works in progress. I would get comments and things like, you know, where is the pattern for this? Or, you know, how do I make something like this? And of course, as we know, there is no pattern with improvised quilting. So I knew that there was definitely a sort of a need or a desire from people to learn more about this improv techniques. And, you know, I didn't invent improv. It's been around for you know, centuries, this way of piecing in a liberated way. But I knew that there was people now on social media of this generation that wanted to learn more. So I kind of just approached a couple of book publishers, craft book publishers. I had a wish list, and top of that list was Lucky Spool, who fortunately for me loved the idea. We tweaked it a little bit, but the basic premise was about sort of breaking free, doing exactly what we spoke about, you know, looking around you, being inspired by non-traditional things to make quilts, and then to make those quilts using improv piecing techniques. So it has inspiration at the heart of it, I would say, and it teaches the reader 6 of my favorite piecing techniques. So you're looking at improv triangles and rings and, you know, freehand curves and all of these fun sort of things just to arm you and give you a sort of toolbox, if you like, of improv piecing techniques. And then along with that, there are 12 quilt projects at the end of it. So you can use your newfound skills to be inspired by the quilts that I've made and put your own spin on them. And each of those quilts has a sort of unique inspiration behind it, like the tree from Yosemite from our shared trip that we took, you know, the cabbage, and also traditional quilts. So I'm inspired by log cabins, but I put my own sort of liberated spin on it, and sort of nine patch and older traditional quilts as well. So it's a real sort of deep dive, if you like, into my process as a quilter, talking about color theory a little bit, inspiration, the techniques, and then putting all of that into practice to make quilts. So if you're new to improv, it sort of holds your hand, if you like, through the whole process. But if you have dabbled in improv previously, I would hope that you would still get something out of the book and that you'll sort of learn that you can be inspired by sort of a lot more non-traditional things as well.
Yeah, I love that. What was it like making 12 quilts for a book? Or were they already made?
No, so this is so you kind of have rough ideas when you pitch the book proposal to the publisher, and you think, right, I'm going to make a quilt that showcases triangles, and I'll make a larger version of my cabbage quilt so that showcases sort of the slab technique or whatever. So I kind of had a rough idea of what the quilts would be, and then when I signed the contract, it was like, right, we want to photograph them in 6 months or whatever. So that was like two quilts a month. So there was lots of, late nighttime sewing. There was lots of sewing fueled by very eclectic playlists on my phone, jumping from Mariah Carey to Mozart and all of the stuff in between, just to kind of spur me on. But it's a hard process. I mean, anybody who's written a book, whether it's a fiction book or a nonfiction book, that in itself is a sort of labor. But then to have to make things to go along with that is quite a process. But I just knuckled down. I knew it had to be done. People had to do their part, which relied on me doing my part in a timely manner. So it was stressful, but it was also fun as well to see them come from idea to fully realized quilt, and knowing that I was arming people with it, hopefully inspiration and the ideas that they could then do this themselves. So yeah,
for sure. And then in your new book, how many quilts did you make for that one?
So I made eight quilts for the new book. So a little bit fewer quilts in this one. But what I love about this book is the sort of each of the quilts has a very specific story behind it, and also a very specific way of how we can use a quilt and how we view a quilt. So the title Use and Ornament alludes to that. So yes, we know that quilts can be wonderful home decoration. They can keep you warm, they can be on a bed, but history tells us also that quilts have been many other things. So they've been items of protest or political protest or equal rights or women's rights or LGBTQ rights. They've been objects that commemorate something or objects that mourn someone. So quilting has a rich, varied history that moves it beyond just utilitarian objects. And that's what I wanted to get across in the new book. So although there are fewer quilts, their story and the meaning behind them is much bigger, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah. And then are there still tutorials and things in the new book, or how is the new book oriented, I guess?
Yeah, absolutely. So I would call Use and Ornament sort of, it's my love letter to improv quilting is how I've been pitching it to people. And it's part craft book, but it's more going into sort of the realms of a history / coffee table book, in the fact that I talk about, first of all, a little bit about my improv journey. And then I talk about how improv and improvised quilting is not a new thing. And I share historical examples of that. So I look at quilts, old traditional flannel quilts from Wales. I look at Victorian crazy quilts, quilts from the Jeez Bend community in Alabama, who are one of the main sources of inspiration for me when it comes to improv quilting. Their work is absolutely outstanding. So improv has a long and rich and varied history that sort of predates what a lot of people think of improv, because people I talk to, you mentioned improv, they say, oh, that new modern way of quilting, that's only been around in the last sort of 10, 15 years, but that's, that couldn't be further from the truth. So that's how the book opens up. And then I sort of wanted to introduce people who are working in the style now. So I talk about many of my contemporaries and people who inspire me, and they are all what you would consider improvised quilters, but their work and the way that they make their quilts and the reasons that they make their quilts are all very varied. So that was nice to sort of just to get a little bit more knowledge about their processes. And then we go into the last part of the book, the last third, which is I'm giving you more techniques again. So some of newer techniques that I learned or I implemented for making the projects. So we look at different ways to face a quilt, different ways to bind a quilt. We're looking at some hand quilting, traditional Welsh facings of quilts, new piecing techniques, the stuff applique, as you may know from the cover quilt. We talk about that and I show you how I did that. And then again, similarly, those then are highlighted in completed quilt projects that have a much deeper, richer story behind them. So for example, the temperature quilt, the cover of the book, was designed as a quilt that records something. So there are lots of quilts throughout history that records, you know, sort of important dates, or it can just be something like a birthday. So I wanted to make a temperature quilt to act as something that records the temperature in my area where I live. So that highlights the stuffed applique technique, which is one of sort of six or seven techniques. So each quilt is linked to a technique, but also has a rich story behind it as well.
That's amazing. And then for you personally, I know that, you know, you're just always making quilts and quilting because that's, you know, obviously what you love. And I know. And I know that my parents, because we're friends, my parents are also friends with you, were there not too long ago and they brought you a quilt that was over here. And I think won some awards. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so that is the cover of the book. So the one that I was just mentioning, the temperature quilt. So it's called Viral Temperature. And it was made during lockdown here in the UK, which I think, like the rest of the world, kicked off in and around March 2020. So everybody was home. Everybody was sort of not allowed to go out. And I was so fortunate to have sewing and quilting as a solace, just to sort of fill my day and just give me something to focus my energy on. And I've wanted to make a temperature quilt for a long time. I've been inspired by several versions that I saw online. So I thought this is the perfect time. But I wanted to do something a little bit different, something that was new to me, that would sort of push my skills as a quilter. So I happened upon this book that talked about the very traditional, original method of trapunto. So it's that raised quilting that you see. Nowadays, it's done in a slightly different way, in a method that people call faux trapunto. But originally, what would have been done would be that the applique shape would have been stitched onto a background. You would have slit the background from behind and then filled it with wool or wadding or sheep's fleece, anything, just to give a raised sort of profile on that shape. So I decided that that's what I wanted to explore. So I recorded the temperature every day for a year. And then for every day, I cut out an organic shape, applique it down onto a background square, and then did the stuffed applique from the back and then stitched them all together. And that was a record of Cardiff's temperature from the middle of April, I think, which is when I started 2020, all the way through to April 2021. So completely new for me. This wasn't piecing. You know, I'm known as an improv piecer. This is applique. This is a different textile technique. So I was really pleased with it. It was chosen to be the cover of the book after much deliberation. And it obviously included in the book as a technique that you can learn. And then QuiltCon came around. So for anybody that doesn't know, QuiltCon is a big sort of quilt show that happens every year, and it moves around the country in the United States. And every year it's in a different place. So I thought, I'm going to enter this. And QuiltCon has an applique category. So I decided just to enter it into that category. And I was blown away when I found out that it had won second place in that category. It was made all the more sweeter, actually, because the journey to send it there took a bit of a detour. The quilt actually went missing for a period of time. So I was really upset about that. And I was just, it was a whole big thing. There were tears, there were tantrums, it was just a nightmare. But fortunately, it made its way to QuiltCon in time. It got judged and it was awarded second place. And then because I was so petrified of it being lost on the way back, my editor kindly decided to, or offered rather, to pick it up from QuiltCon, and he actually drove or met your parents somewhere in California. This sounds like, you know, some dodgy deal, but it's all above board. Gave them the quilt. Gave them the quilt in person, and then they very kindly put it in their hand luggage when they knew that they were coming to visit us here in Wales. So I will be forever grateful for that. And when I saw it, I think I just gave your mum the biggest hug, because I was so paranoid that it was going to get lost. And she and your dad as well took the time to, you know, not only get the quilt that, you know, the stateside, but then travel with it across the Atlantic Ocean to come here.
Yeah.
And bring it to me.
Yeah, and what a journey for an award-winning quilt.
Yes. Needless to say, it's never leaving my sight ever again.
Is it hanging in your house now?
Shockingly, it's folded in the cupboard at the moment, because we're doing some painting at the moment, so I want to put anything that's precious out of sight. So yeah, it's just put in the cupboard, but at least I know where it is. It's in a safe place.
Yes, absolutely. Well, just to kind of wrap it up, I suppose. Do you have like a piece of advice for new sewists and or new quilters specifically?
My top piece of advice to anybody that's maybe sitting on the edge of traditional and wanting to maybe push their creativity a little bit more is just go for it. The great thing about improv is you need very few tools. You don't even need a sewing machine. You could hand stitch. So as long as you've got thread and something to pass that thread through fabric, be it a sewing machine or a hand sewing needle, you could start improv quilting right now. So everybody accumulates scraps and odd bits of fabric. If you are a sewist or if you're a dressmaker, just take a few of those scraps, put one next to the other along a straight line, and then stitch them together. Press that open and take a look at it, and then maybe cut a little bit more off, have a rummage, see what speaks to you, take a contrasting color, take a coordinating color, and stitch that to it. And then you are already there improv piecing. And that little sort of 5 minute, 10 minute play doesn't have to become anything. It can be put into a drawer and you may never look at it again, but you've kind of taken that fear of the unknown away from you and kind of shown yourself that, well, actually that wasn't too bad. You know, it wasn't scary. I didn't have a pattern and no one told me what the sizes these pieces should be, but it was, you know, it was fine. No one, you know, there were no tears. So that is my top tip to anybody. It's just, you can do it. Just start small. You know, we don't have to be making our California King quilts here, people. We know this now. Start small and the rest will follow. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. And from your Instagram, I love how you often post pictures of the quilt tops like at a window with the natural light coming through it. And I think even if you do nothing more than that, like if you just make one block and put it on a window and just see the light coming through it, it's just, it brings me so much joy. And I'm sure there's others out there that it would too.
Yeah, I mean, I love that, because that, I often do that with the triangle quilts that I make, because when you backlight it, as you said, you can see the seam. So it kind of reads like stained glass with leading.
Yes.
And you could totally stop there. As you said, it doesn't need to become a quilt. It can be just a sort of piece of improv sewing, you know, and have it as a decorative item just hanging in your window. But it looks beautiful and, you know, it really does look like stained glass. So even if you don't get to the quilting stage, you still experience what it's like to piece in an improvised way and hopefully being sort of changed or marked in some small way by that process.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for taking the time with me today, Nick.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's been wonderful.
Yeah, I'll put all the links to everything in the show notes.
Perfect. Thank you, Stacey.
Thanks. Enjoy your evening over there.
You too. Bye.
Bye. Thanks so much for tuning in to this episode of the Modern Domestique podcast. And a big thanks to Nicholas Ball for the conversation today. Check out the show notes for links to his books and Instagram. And if you want more of the Modern Domestique, make sure to check out my Substack, which is also linked in the show notes. The Substack has both a free and paid subscriber option, and the paid subscriptions help to fund this podcast and the rest of my work. You can also support my work by giving this podcast a 5-star review or by telling a friend. Thanks for tuning in, and have a very Modern Domestique day.